And once the other four find out what's happened, you won't be able to deal with Mitsuki either. The five will band together and stomp you flat. They'll never allow just one of their member conglomerates to control Ryan. Rather than give up that kind of advantage, they'd prefer to see him dead, his information destroyed, and the playing field leveled for all.
The Mercy Leader rubbed the scar on his chin thoughtfully.
Damn, stop the van right here. Let me contact my superiors and see what we can work out.
You can do that once we arrive at our destination. I don't want any surprises from the Mitsuki Tactical Unit.
As the van closed on the ramp entrance, the crowds blocking its path scattered, revealing those who were beyond scattering. Piles of bodies lay on the ground, both around the entrance and some distance down the ramp where they had been tossed. The driver revved his engine and shifted into four-wheel to plow through the mounds of obstacles. Beyond the mounds, there were no more people, alive or dead, just a long, gray, sloping tunnel. After a few minutes of travel, more red-painted walls appeared in the high beams. This time they were decorated with black and white skulls and crossbones. No security gate blocked their way, just a big sign hanging from the ceiling that warned, "Slime Zone, 100 yards.
You can't take us below condensation level. We don't have biohazard suits.
Relax, Jurassic. We've got an environment already prepared and waiting. As long as we arrive there in under 7 minutes, no one will die.
This is insane.
Yeah, that's what I'm counting on.
Ahead, a dense white fog filled the tunnel. The driver slowed to a crawl. As he entered the cloud, visibility dropped to zero, and the air became so heavy it was difficult for Ryan to breathe. When they emerged on the other side of the fog, the heat and humidity jumped off the scale. As sweat squirted from Ryan's face, he choked on the overwhelming smell of ammonia. The van's headlamps lit up the end of the ramp below. Red walls, gray floor and ceiling, turning into a rectangle of pitch black. As they rolled beyond the foot of the ramp, into a gallery of tremendous width, if not height, the tires made wet, squishing sounds. The glistening heaps of green-black covered everything. Bulging masses of it clung to the walls. It hung in colossal drapes from the roof, and between the green on the ground and the green swaying from the ceiling, airspace was at a premium.
What is that shit?
It's the only fellow traveler on the planet that we haven't found a way to kill.
It's cyanobacteria, genetically tailored to function in low levels of light. We've relied on it for food production for a decade since our other forms of agriculture collapsed. 3 years ago, the bacteria got out of control. After it escaped from the processing plants, it spread through all the megacities, and we've had to abandon huge areas to it.
People, too. Sealed them off behind concrete walls trying to stop the spread. Didn't do any good, though. The stuff eventually eats right through concrete. The only thing that kept it from taking over Gloomtown and the CEO level was the condensation layer we passed through back there. Above that, the climate's not optimum for agrobacteria.
Ryan watched a world of green slide by. The van slushed and wallowed through drifts that were 4 foot deep in places. There were no other signs of life.
Pretty deadly, huh?
Unprotected out there, you would grow a nice furry green coat in about half an hour. You would vanish from sight shortly thereafter. Of course, you wouldn't notice it because you'd already be long dead. We can breathe the concentrated spores for only a few minutes before lung and heart damage begins. After that, the bacterial reproduction cycle really kicks off. It's pretty hard to suck air with 20 pounds of slime packing each lung.
After that siren alarm started, a Sekhmen in the first wag coughed his lungs up all over me. He didn't have anything green in him that I could see.
Different bug. That was a carnifage. It was developed from a naturally occurring beastie that normally lives in the deep ocean offshore. The species first started showing up in our industrialized salt marshes when I was a kid. Turns out, the carnifage can be either a plant or an animal, depending on the living conditions it finds. It really liked the nitrite pollution from our industrial outflow. Once it was settled in nicely along our coastal shorelines, it started hatching out on a daily basis. And when it hatched out, it killed and ate plants, fish, birds, land animals, everything it came in contact with. For a long time, the problem was confined to the eastern seaboard. Then the bright boys at PCS decided to make a human population control weapon out of it. They tinkered around with its genetics and ended up spreading it even further afield. Carnophages are everywhere now. They can't be controlled, so we have to adapt to them.
And the Sirens?
Only good thing PCS did was to stumble on a way to detect the start of their reproduction cycle. That alert siren goes off whenever cell concentrations reach critical mass, which is pretty much like clockwork twice a day. It's keyed to the tidal cycle. When the siren sounds, everyone heads for pressurized shelters. Of course, PCS made sure there's never enough shelter space to go around. If you don't get inside, you die. The agrobacteria down here on slime level just drown you with their wet weight. But if you suck in a lungful of carnophages, they eat you from the inside out. Takes about a minute to kill you. Then they really get to work. They are busy little fuckers.
Ryan looked at the backs of his hands, which were dotted with tiny red spots.
That's nothing. When they get on the skin's surface in low concentrations, they can cause rashes and boils, and in some cases, even temporary blindness, all of which goes away in a few hours. Carnophages are really only deadly during the reproductive stage of their life cycle, when there's lots and lots of them. They hatch out, eat, multiply, and either die or go dormant, all on their own timetable. The whole thing lasts half an hour from start to finish.
I saw the guys in black armor use something like that in Deathlands, only it ate flesh from the outside in.
You must mean the mill weapon. Those aren't airborne bacteria. They're held in supersaturated concentrations in a foam suspension.
The van's high beams caught the outline of something ahead that wasn't all green. Ryan recognized the rear of a semi-trailer, parked in the middle of nowhere. Its silver sides were striped with slimy, wet fronds.
You've got to be kidding. That's not going to protect us.
It's all been taken care of.
When the driver sounded his horn, the rear double doors of the trailer swung open, revealing a brightly lit interior. The two men waiting inside quickly lowered a metal ramp. The driver turned and reversed the van up and into the trailer. Ryan and Nara climbed out of the van along with everyone else. The driver and three others donned black plastic boots, rain suits, and gauntlets before pulling the protective yellow plastic bags over their heads. Picking up laser rifles, the four of them hopped off the trailer's tailgate. Ryan got a good look outside before they shut the doors. Beyond range of the trailer's interior lights, it was blacker than the 10th level of hell out there. The long compartment was lined, floor, ceiling, and walls, with an envelope of taped-together sheet plastic, which was inflated by air pumps spaced along the floor. After ushering Ryan and Nara to the front of the box, the others completely covered the van with a clear plastic tarp and secured it on the floor with sandbags. It was even hotter inside the trailer. Through the clear plastic, it looked like the walls were insulated with a silver material.
The van's contaminated. Covering it over like that's not going to keep the inside of this place and us from turning green. And what about the agrobacteria that's seeping in from the outside through the seams in the envelope?
You're right. Eventually, this interior space is going to become a solid mass of slime. But long before that happens, we'll be out of here and on our way to Shadow World. In the meantime, don't worry. Pressure from those air pumps should keep most of the spores out. Now, why don't you have a seat and get your thoughts together?
Dam indicated the stack of plastic crates along the trailer wall. As Ryan and Nara took seats, the Mercy started passing around foil packets. Ryan got three. They were about the size of his palm and warm to the touch. When he opened the one labeled Beefy Cheesy, a puff of steam came out. Even in the ammonia-laced air, the aroma was noticeably sharp and bitter. Inside the foil, a pair of spongy white layers bracketed a densely compacted brown layer. Ryan lifted the edge of the white and discovered a thin coating of orange goo on top of the brown.
This is supposed to be food?
He and Nara were the only ones not eating.
It's what passes for it nowadays. Unless you're a CEO.
Dam chewed the round, pale sandwich. Nara took the packets away from Ryan and put them on the floor.
If this is what you've been living on, Dam, it explains a lot.